Today we're going to be doing the 11th Psalm, and it is very similar in many ways to those that came before it, and a few that go into the 20s afterwards, and I'll explain in what way it's similar. The ones that come before it from the very beginning, from the first psalm, is Ashrei Ha'ish, who is the virtuous person, who is not the virtuous person. The differentiating between Rishoim and Tzadikim. And in the verses that come, in the chapters that come right before, as well as the ones that come right after, you have the plight of an innocent person being persecuted. Whether it's an individual or whether it's a collective being persecuted by people who are horrible. And in all of them, there is a turn to God to stand up for the oppressed, to stand up for those that are innocent and prove them and vindicate them. That is what, in all of them, there is one form or another, a turn to God and a request for that. What makes the 11th chapter unique is not in the strife between the righteous and the evildoers, but by the fact that there isn't a single turn to God. There is no prayer in the process. Instead, if I had to give it a subtitle, it would be, this is about bitachon. No longer am I turning to God to come and strike down the evil people with, you know, like, boom, but rather a statement of faith that though it seems that God is far away and has abandoned us to our own evil instincts, allowing evil to reign on this earth, the believer remains steadfast and unshakable in doing the right thing, even if it doesn't seem to pay. Some, such as Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, believe that this is one of the few Mizmorei Tehillim that address the issue of what we call theodicy, namely, why it is that good people are suffering and evil people are flourishing, the injustice in the world. Now, it is a bit complex, though it's a short 7-verse mizmor, but I laid it out for you, and I even dared to put in punctuation marks, such as question marks, exclamation points, because of declarations based on the most of the mefarshim. So if there was a consensus about something, that's when I dared do it. I also went and laid it out based on the Te'amei HaMikra, so that you will see sometimes that a verse is longer than one line. Some of them have, if you like, 4 little lines, and some of them have 3. It is not completely rhythmic. This is not lyrical. This is a poem to be thought about. You understand? So you're not going to get a classic song rhythm in this. This is quite different. Lamnatseach leDavid. And most commentaries don't question that this was written by David himself. In a moment of testing, the big argument is when. Some try to place this during the time when he's fleeing from Shaul, particularly after the massacre in Nov. I will remind you that David, in one of his running away from Shaul, this is after he's married to Michal, Shaul is out to kill him. You will remember that he sent assassins up to his bed, and Michal scurried him down the window. And she had this effigy in the bed, and they came in and found out that he'd escaped, and they went out on a mad manhunt. He finally found refuge, hungry, without any arms, to a town called Nov. It was a town settled by Kohanim. There was a Kohen with whom he had entrusted the sword that he had taken from Goliath, from Goliath. You remember that he managed to knock him down with a slingshot, but then he took Goliath's own sword to chop off his head. And that trophy sword he entrusted to the Kohen. The Kohanim gave him refuge and gave him food. And he took that, and in order not to endanger them any further, escaped and left that city and continued on his run. Shaul found out that he had taken refuge there and wiped out the entire city of these Kohanim. I need you to understand that, according to many, and Rashi cites this in certain Midrashim, this was written at that point. Others place this much, much later and see this as towards the end of his life, when he's now escaped from Avshalom, his own son, who's out to kill him. But at this point, he's been stabbed in the back by his, you know, members of his own court who have sided with Avshalom. So there's a tremendous sense of betrayal. This is now not the case of there's the black and the white, because now you are fighting against people that you loved, your own child, and members of your court that helped you throughout the years who've now turned on you. So there is a horrific sense of loneliness, a horrific sense that you've been abandoned by everyone, you can trust no one. And yet I told you that the subtitle for this mizmor is bitachon, trust. Because he's left to trust no one but the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's all he's left. And so at the top he begins as follows, Bahashem Hasiti. In Hashem I found shelter. Okay. Declaration. That's the declaration. It's almost like the title. Eich tomru lenafshi. Nudu nudi harchem tzipo. So let's try to see what this. The word eich is clearly a question word. How? How can you say to my soul? And that would be one way of translating it. But remember that the word le is to. Or it can mean le David about, al. How can you say about my soul? How can you say about my soul what? Nudi is the way we read it, but it's written nudu. Now, lanud, na venad means to wander. The wandering Jew. Now, if you talk about this nefesh, a nefesh is nekeva, and it's singular, nafshi, you would say nudi. So why would you say nudu, write nudu and read nudi? When we have a kri and ktiv, you read it one way, you say it a different way. We have here a double entendre. I am taking the singular, I'm turning it into plural, because who is also fleeing with him? Do you remember that he gathered a bunch of men that were with him? Whether in the days of Shaul, he ended up having, it was like Lehavdil, Robin Hood and his merry band, right? There was nearly 400 men that were homeless, people who had lost their property by virtue of debt, people who were, as a result, on the other side of the law because their lands had been repossessed, they'd been taken away, things they didn't have anything. And they ended up joining with him. So it could be that this was being said not only to him, but also to them. Namely, that they better wander off, flee, migrate, tzipol. And what isn't written here is ke tzipol, like a bird. A bird that wanders, says Rashi, from one nest to another nest, because when a predator comes along and destroys the nest and takes away the bird, what does the bird do? Fly somewhere else and builds a nest again, until they do it again to him, and then he flies again. And he goes from tree to higher tree, hoping away to get away from his predators, to get away from his enemies. So what's missing here is the word kemo, like a bird. And I don't know what your translations do with this, but I would like to hear if somebody can read me the first verse, how it was translated. Anybody have a translation?
To the chief musician, the Psalm of David, in Adonai, I have taken refuge. How do you say to my soul, flee to your mountain as a bird?
As a bird. You see, they added the word as, even though it's not actually there. Correct? But what if instead it doesn't mean that? How can you say to my soul, what do they say to my soul? Nuditsipo. Flee, wander bird, where the soul is like a fluttering bird. Do you understand? Then it's not like a bird. It's, I'm addressing you as, you bird. Hey bird, fly away. Birdie, fly away. Bye-bye, birdie. But then we have a problem with that little word, ha-chem. Ha means mountain. Chem is your in plural. You see, you don't get that in English. Mm-hmm. So what did they do in English?
Your mountain.
Your mountain. So you don't see the conflict between the fact that it's singular.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean? Rashi tells us as follows. It means me-ha-chem. Mitzudot David says, Ha-chem is a mountain. And a mountain is a place of refuge. It's also, Esa enai eleharim, lift up my eyes to the mountains. And mountain sometimes refers to the powerful people. So what I'm telling you is, I am saying, wander off from your mountain. To another mountain, bird. But it's plural mountain. So who's being told to wander off? David's supporters, David's entourage, the men that have come with them, are being told, you better leave him. He's a dead man. If you know what's good, abandon him. Get away from that mountain, for he is nothing but a little bird. So the mixture of nudi, nudu, is that they told him to wander like a bird, but they're also telling his men to abandon it. It's how can you plot, how can you scheme to my soul, in other words, how to kill me, while you are saying, wander off from your king. Wander off from what else? Harashem. Harashem is that he needs to leave Yerushalayim. So you will recall that when he fled Avshalom, he left Yerushalayim so that take the war away from the women and children. To Radak and to others, this is now universalized. And this universalization is, how can you wander off from that which you rely on? From your country, from your faith, from your God, you are but a bird. Now you might remember that there was a song that we used to sing, at least as children, a little bird is calling. Do you remember that? Guess where that comes from? It's from here. The little bird is Am Yisrael. And it had to leave its mountain, its home, and it wants to come back to its mountain. This is no longer simply about one man or a group of men being persecuted for no good reason. This is about Am Yisrael in Golos. And who is being told, we're out to get your soul. Wander, wander from your mountain, little bird. How can you say that? Says Malbim, this song is about the following enemies. This is not merely those that want to kill us. This is those that don't believe that there is Hashgacha Pratit, that God watches us, that he even sees. And they found proof for it. For if God was watching and didn't abandon this world, how can the little bird be chased away? How can it be that innocents are killed? How can there be Auschwitz if there is a God who hears and sees and listens? And that is the Malbim's approach and Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch's approach, taking this to the universal. How can you do this? Ki hinei ha-resha'im yidrechum keshet. Look, hinei, it's right in front of you. The evil people are, and lidroch is to step on. Remember when you have a big bow, you kind of pull it, right, to get the proper aim. And then, konenu, they're aiming their arrow al yeter. The yeter is that string. They balance it on the string. Lirot b'mo'efel, to shoot in the fog, in the darkness, where no one can see. Le'yishrei lev, to the honest-hearted people. Look, evil people are doing this. And that's the proof that what? Hashem has abandoned us. There's no one watching. Because if he were watching, how can he let it happen? Ki hashatoti harisun. And that's why I put an exclamation point there. For they have destroyed, these Rishoyim, the foundations, the pillars of our faith, of our society, of our civilization. You see, they have destroyed the notion that what? Good guys finally come win, right? Evil is destroyed. They have destroyed the social contract. If you follow the law, if you do the right thing, you'll be okay. Instead, chaos reigns. Ah, tzaddik, ma pa'al. The righteous, what has he achieved? What has he done? In other words, I did all of this and it was for nothing. My daughter's grandmother, who lived to 120, went through the Shoah. And she says that during their years in the camp, she and her sister did not once put pork or meat, they knew horse meat, whatever was there, into their mouths. They so wanted to make sure that they would be worthy of their father and didn't do this. She says they were starving until liberation. Until then, they hoped that they would be reunited with their families. When they discovered that everybody had been killed, that there was nothing left, she said she went out with her sister and stuffed themselves in treif restaurants. It was like, where were you for that? We starved. They described that they were sitting outside some treif cafe when a man walked by and he recognized them. Oh my gosh, you're the daughters of Rabbi so-and-so. What are you doing? And they felt such shame. They felt such shame. So that was the one and the last time. But all of their faith had been shaken. They were hungry. They suffered. And they thought that they would end. We would come out there and we would be winners. And we lost it all. Tzadik. Mapa'al. That's one pirush. What was the point of... Why did I deny myself? Why didn't I eat? I could have been strong. Why did I have to suffer hunger? Look at what I did. Some, however, argued differently. Tzadik is Hashem, based on Devarim in Ha'azinu, where Moshe Rabbeinu says that the Ribbono Shelolam tzaddik v'yashar, at the end of time you will see that God was righteous, he was honest, and he fulfilled his promises. So tzaddik, you're the tzaddik, you're the one that believes in justice. Ma'pa'al, what did you do as we were suffering? What did you do when children were being killed? Mapa'al, what did you do? Those are the two pirushim that you'll find extant among Rishonim and Achronim. Is the tzaddik the man who's writing this? Or talking about any tzaddik? Or is tzaddik God himself? And that ends our first furious anger. Ah, Hashem Behechal Kodesh. God is sitting in his holy, a Hechal is like a palace. Hashem Bashamayim Kiso. God's throne is in the heavens. Einav Yechezu, his eyes see. Afapav, his eyelids, yivchenu. So that could mean discern, or it can mean b'china, they test, bnei adam, human beings. Explains the Malbim as follows. He says, unlike Hadaku says, he's saying the same thing in different words for poetic emphasis. He says, Hashem Behechal Kodesho is that God is living in his palace. Where was God's palace? He said, build me a Mishkan and I will dwell here with you. We built him a Hechal, the Beit HaMikdash, so that we would see the presence of the Shechina down here. That's when it was obvious that there was Hashgacha Pratit. There was somebody watching over us. But then there are times when what? Hashem Bashamayim Kiso. It seems like God has left us. There's Hester Ponim and he's turned away. And he has taken his throne from down here amongst us and brought it up to the heavens. God still exists, but he's far, far away. The first part is Einav Yechezu. When he was down here amongst us, his eyes saw. But when he took his throne up above, says Malbim, Afapav, the afapaim, the eyelids, do what?
Close.
They close the eyes. His eyelids tested human faith. And what is the test? Do you remain faithful? Do you remain obedient because you see the thunderbolts coming out of the heavens and there's open nisim? Or you will do it even when it's not obvious. You see, how do we prove that a human being is truly moral and not merely a highly sophisticated, trained Pavlovian dog? If every time you did something bad, you got a patch, and every time you did something good, out came a little doggy treat, you would be a well-trained dog. It's the way we raise children. But eventually, says the Rambam, you have to withdraw. But if you're a well-trained Pavlovian dog, you believe that maybe you won't get instantaneous gratification, but you'll get eventual gratification, right? And each time we delay it. So he has to do a few more tricks before he gets his treat. We delay it, and we gradually make it until eventually it does what? It's no longer external to you. It becomes internalized. When it becomes internalized, what happens when you find out that there will be no treat? What if there's no heaven? What if there is no hell? Because you don't know that there is a heaven and you don't know that there is a hell. And nowhere in the entire Torah will you be able to find an explicit mention of it. Not merely because you cannot possibly comprehend it because you don't have a body. But because, in fact, to become moral, you have to presume, would you do the right thing even if no one would reward you? Would you not do the bad thing even if no one will catch you when the eyes are closed? Bitochen, trust, is what? That you're going to get all your prayers answered? Bitochen is trust in goodness. in goodness for the sake of goodness. Lishma. Because you were a creature created in the image of God. And therefore you will do the right thing, even if there will be no treat at the end. How can we prove that a human being is capable of true morality and is not merely a Skinnerian notion? Is there something such as morality? Or is it merely expediency? Is it to only be explained by some sort of Darwinian or Skinnerian scenario where you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours? Well, we claim that there's something called chesed shel emet, what you do with the dead, right? Because they can't pay you back. Is there true goodness? All I need to do is find one human being who will remain good even if it isn't to die. And who will not do bad even if all of the lures in the world are placed before him. Right? That's called Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem, to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, is not merely to sanctify God's name. It's to sanctify the human being. Ah, what man is capable of, who was created in the image of God. Man is capable of goodness that was never rewarded. And man is capable of avoiding evil no matter what the lure. And we have a whole history to prove it. That there are people who remained faithful in spite of the fact that they are chased away, murdered, in spite of everything. That's when you will prove it. So God presents us, according to the Malbim in the fourth verse, with two options. There were times in which God's presence was palpable, where you saw open nisim. And even then we complained. Even then we complained because we couldn't see what was in front of our own eyes. And then there are times when it clearly has to be a case of hestoponim to prove not what God is, but what is man. And at that time you will discover that man is capable of the most horrific atrocities and is also capable of giving his last piece of bread to someone he loves. Or even to a stranger. And he's capable of that. And in the process, he proves that man was created in the image of God. And therefore he continues, Hashem tzadik yifchan. God only tests the righteous. The Midrash tells us that God knocks on vessels that are not fragile. Fragile vessels, he leaves them alone. They'll crack under the midst. V'rasha ve'ohev chamas. But evildoers and those who love violence, san'a nafsho, God hates them. His soul hates them. He despises them. And David believed that having God's love and his closeness is sufficient reward from rather being cast out and despised. Yamter al reshaim pachim. And this is not merely a statement of faith. This is a curse. May he rain down on the reshaim pachim. Some say pachim is pchamim. It means pchamim is coals. Some say no, a pach is actually a trap. He rains down upon them traps. Their own evil acts are traps in which they themselves will be caught. They will self-destruct. So their success is nothing more than an entrapment. Esh v'gofrit v'ruach zalafot. Fire. Gofrit is sulfur. They say brimstone. V'ruach zalafot. A wind that shakes you. A tempest. Menat kosam. That's their portion. That's their cup. So it's literally the case of if you sow evil, you reap the whirlwind. Ki tzadik Hashem. For God is a tzadik. And this is literally quoting from Ha'azinu, as well as from this 92nd Psalm. Ki tzadik Hashem, right? V'lo avlata bo. And the fault is not in him. Tzedakot I have. And he loves tzedakot. He loves when people do justice. But this is not mishpat. This is mishpat tempered with mercy. If he loves charities. He loves people who give others. Yashar. Who's Yashar? Hashem. Ki tzadik Hashem. And the second half is parallel to it. Yechezu pneimo. Or, Yashar Yechezu pneimo. We have a problem. Yechezu is plural. They will see his face. Right? If they will see his face, who will see whose face? So let's talk about what the options are. If it's the tzedakot, people who do tzedakot, and the people who are honest, their great reward is what? That they will see God's face. True his face. You understand? They will see his face. In other words, they will come up there. They will see. It'll all then make sense. They will then be vindicated and see the truth. That is one. If that's the case, Yechazu plural is tzedakot, and possibly also the yashar, the straight person. Others argue, Hashem is tzadik, Hashem is yashar. And you remember how earlier in verse 4 it says, Einav Yechazu, his eyes will see, his eyes will see your face. There's only one problem. Yechazu is plural. He would then say it because we're personifying God. His eyes will see you. In other words, it will be the ultimate protection where he will watch over you, looking at your face. Why? Because of the priestly blessing. Ya'er Hashem panav elecha. May God shine his countenance to you. But what does it mean, shine his countenance to you? Ki'ilu, he shows his face to you. It means everything goes your way. And you have a sense that he's with you. You have a sense that he's looking you in the eye. He's looking at you. He's watching over you. He's protecting you. That is from the notion here. So he will watch and see whose face? Your face, not his face. Which one do you think? What does your English translation do with this? He has to choose one or the other.
The upright will behold his face. His face, capital H. Okay, so what does Hashem say to Moshe? No, you cannot see my face and live.
Correct. So when will you see his face?
So
now there is an implication. After death, after this, you will understand it all.
But you're dead.
But you are no longer in your body because your body cannot see his face and live.
Right.
So if you learn Ha'azinu, the inspiration, frankly, for this comes from Ha'azinu, which is the last chapter of Moshe's life, his poem in which he describes that though it seems sometimes that good guys come last, there is an ultimate reward where it all becomes straight. And what will you there see? Ki tzadik v'yashar.